Welcome to Understory, this 11th day of November 2020. I'm Elizabeth Poe. For most of history, the total human population number has remained more or less constant, somewhere under 1 billion. But then the agrarian and industrial revolutions came along. Life expectancy of children went up. World population stopped being steady state and has been rising since the year 1800. 1930 saw the number of people on the planet double to 2 billion. By 1974, population had doubled again to 4 billion. Today, in 2020, we find ourselves almost doubled again at 7.8 billion people. Population is a difficult issue because, firstly, different people have different understandings as to what the problem exactly is. A couple of weeks ago, Bob Brown told the Australian newspaper, not ordinarily a fan, that it was time to act on world population. We are already using more than what the planet can supply, the former Greens leader told the Murdoch Press. When the Australian approached environment groups to respond to Bob Brown's remarks, the journalist was apparently told they didn't comment on population growth. For some, it's simply a matter of too many people. Others point out differential consumption, and then finding an answer, like insisting on birth control, forced sterilizations, or one-child policies, has dystopian impacts. Sangeetha Dhanapal is a writer and social media activist engaged in anti-racism work in Singapore and Australia. Sangeetha published a response to Bob Brown's call for a declining global population in last week's online Eureka Street. She is speaking with Understory's Adrian Glamorgan.
My name's Sangeetha Dhanapal, and I'm an activist and a writer. I write both fiction and non-fiction.
Do we first of all have an environmental problem?
In case you have some climate denialists listening to you, I want to say, of course we do. We are facing down the barrel of a climate dystopia. And we should, you know, really get around to thinking about what we're going to do in the dystopic world that we are going to be living in about 20 years.
You know, when I was born, the population was 2.5 billion people. It's a lot more now. Is that a problem that we need to address?
The premise or the assumption is that if you reduce population, there is less stress on an already limited resource of resources that are existing in the world. And I think the premise is very easily accepted. And I don't blame people for accepting it either, because you look around, you know that, like, you know, we're running out of oil at a dangerous degree. We are running out of all sorts of resources. And it would seem like the easiest, closest, smartest thing to do to say, hey, we should just have less people, which will allow us to be able to better parcel out these resources. But I think that that premise is actually already shifting the focus away from who is actually destroying the earth. Because it's not like human beings per se. It's not you and me using too much water. It's not your next door neighbor who is wasting all of these things. It's corporations, right? And in my article, I talk about this, that 71% of the most kind of environmental degradation comes from corporations. And the moment we move the focus away from the companies and capitalism that is destroying the environment to people, I think we are going towards a very individualistic, neoliberal way of thinking about how to save the environment.
In her Eureka Street article from last week, Sangeetha Dhanapal notes that the places with high levels of population growth account for just 10% of lifestyle consumption emissions, while the richest in the world make up half the total emissions.
When we talk about the problem of the environment and people point to population, are they distracting us from the question of differential consumption?
Yes, I think they are. You see, I mean, I think that people of color, indigenous people, right, especially when we look at how indigenous people have lived on, let's just take Australia, right, for tens of thousands of years without ruining the environment. In fact, Indigenous people have lived in Australia, so-called Australia, for long enough, and they have cherished the environment, you know. But Western colonialism shows up, and in 400 years, we are facing the end of the human race. So this discourse of overpopulation does... what was the word you used? That perfect word. Differential consumption. Correct. Yes. So, yes, it takes away from differential consumption. So again, if we look at who is using the most, right, it's actually the people who are having the least babies. And I talk about this in my article, which is that the West has seen a declining birth rate to the point where many European countries have turned towards migration, which is a whole other thing, as well as paying people. Like France pays parents to have kids, and it pays them I think about 800 euros every month until they're 18. So these are the countries that are having less children, while the global south between India and Africa are the ones who are having a booming population. And yet, who is using the most resources? It is the Western world. America and Canada alone make up for 40% of consumption. So how the conversation around like overpopulation, like you said, doesn't take into consideration differential consumption, because the people having more babies are relatively poor by Western standards and are consuming a lot less. So even if we accept the overpopulation argument and we say that people should have less kids so that they consume less, it still doesn't make sense, because people having more kids are not consuming the most, while it is the people having less kids who are. And again, I still don't even think it's the people who are, it's the companies and the corporations that are doing that.
You talk about capitalism, and some people like Nancy Fraser have suggested that it is almost impolite to talk about capitalism, even though it's everywhere. As Frederick Jameson says, we can imagine the end of the world, but we can't imagine the end of capitalism. What is capitalism? Can you help explain it? Let's be a bit impolite.
What is capitalism? Oh, God. I mean, listen. So capitalism as a political, social, and economic system, a structure that is global, and in one in which a few hold plenty and the many sell their labor in order to be able to survive under the system, and is premised that the, you know, on never-ending growth, which is this whole thing with GDP and this and that and all of that, growth that is dependent on mining the earth's resources and like I said, and using the profits from that and funneling it into the people, the 1%, the elite, the already rich.
Can you describe the growth of capitalism and colonialism? Did they need each other?
Well, they ended up working together. So when capitalism really starts, right before like industrialization in the UK, so there was a need for an ever-growing market as well as a need for resources, right? So if you look at the literature before capitalism, race wasn't really a thing. As in, differences were there, but people didn't think of race in terms of a hierarchy before capitalism, not much before capitalism. But after capitalism, we start to see the literature change. It starts to become a matter of superiority, inferiority. The natives are likened to animals, while Europeans are likened to humans. And then there's a whole lot of literature on racial capitalism, on the racial contract, on how Christianity sometimes was also used in order to justify these things. And so colonialism is about extraction. It's about the extraction of resources from the colonies to the capital, literally. And in that way, capitalism and colonialism are completely tied together.
You know, I do have some questions, because ethnicity was important before capitalism. There was anti-Semitic pogroms, but I guess what you're talking about is a kind of reification of whiteness that came. Where we are now is that we've got a crisis in the environment, which is linked to a crisis in consumption. And you're saying a discussion about the role of corporations and capitalism and a sense of growth has being deflected as we talk about how many babies there are in the world. I'll ask you your question. Well, what are we going to do about it?
Telling poor people or telling people of color that they need to have less babies. And I think a lot of Europeans would say, oh, I'm not telling people of color that. We're telling people all over the world, including other white people. And I think that's a fair comeback. But again, when we go back to who is having babies and who isn't, right? So when you look at who is having a lot of babies and you're telling those people to have less babies, that is not the solution. Anytime that we tell that we want to legislate how or how many children people have, we are going into very, very dangerous eugenicist territory, and that's not the way that we do it. So what do we do? It's actually, I mean, we need to end corporations, and this is probably going to scare people, but we do. Corporations have way too much power, and they are causing way too much environmental degradation. They really are. 71% of the world's emissions, 71% from corporations. In fact, not just corporate, let's just talk about it, exactly 100 companies. You could do more for the world by getting rid of those 100 CEOs than you would by going vegan and taking less baths and recycling everything. So if people are really interested in stemming climate change, which I personally think that we've gone past the point of no return and we should just prepare for the dystopia, really. But if people are interested in that, right, I think making sure that corporations are no longer allowed to extract from the earth and to pollute the earth is actually the fastest, easiest. I think this should be the easiest. It's the fastest way, and I think it'll be the most efficient way.
One of the thoughts I have about this question of capitalism, colonialism, is that we can point to countries in the world where the local elites are fabulously wealthy beyond anything you or I will bump into in Melbourne or Perth. And maybe there is something greedy in human beings sometimes that wants more things. And I don't hear anything in the analysis yet about how we manage that part of us. Is that an unexplored area?
I don't think so. I mean, if we look at most, I think, neoliberal to right-wing rhetoric, right, it takes for granted that people are greedy, that they always want more, that they will take if they are not stopped from doing so. Thinking about human nature as something that is unchanging and thinking about human nature as something that is innate is the problem, because human nature is very much socially conditioned. We're conditioned to the world, we're conditioned by the world that we live in. People 400 years ago, their human nature would be different than what we are, what we would consider to be human nature now. So I think human nature to me is not a thing that is static. It's something that is constantly in reaction to the world around it. Secondly, if we look at, let's say we do think about humans as always greedy, as always wanting things, right? That assumption falls apart whenever there is a huge, like during a disaster. During a disaster, the first thing people do is come together to help each other. There's always going to be people who hoard. There's going to be people who suddenly up the prices of water and things like that. But those people they're considered as morally terrible people, right? At our most vulnerable, right, human people come together to help other people in every disaster situation. That's the majority of us. So if that is something that is innate to human nature, that's what really should be. That's what comes out in these situations. So I don't believe this idea that humans are always greedy and want more. I think that the rich want more and they take more because we live in a world which allows them to have it. The poor need more because they don't have access to basic things like healthcare and education and safety. And fashioning this as people always want more, kind of really, like, again, it takes out the point about capitalism and how exploitative it is and how capitalism can only function by making sure that the poor have as little as possible so that they are forced to sell their labor and work for more.
We've talked about race. What about the dynamic of gender? Because don't we find when attempts are made to limit population that girl children in many cultures are targeted to not be brought into this world?
Definitely. I mean, there is a gender aspect to this discussion, right? It's not people who can't have babies who are being told that they shouldn't have babies. It's the people who have wombs and can bring babies to term. And on top of that, you're completely right. Like, India's had a long problem of female infanticide, much worse in the north than it is in the south at the moment. But even 50 years ago, we were seeing a really bad imbalance. China still has it because of the one-child policy. And we are seeing a lot of Chinese men being unable to find wives because of it. And that's causing all sorts of other issues. So there is a gendered aspect to this. And like I said, right, this whole thing about overpopulation and things like that, it's always intersectional. It's always intersectional. Race comes into play. Gender comes into play. Poverty comes into play. Like, disabled people, these kinds of things all come into play. The problem with the environmental movement is how white and bougie it is. That a lot of what the environmental movement can learn from is going back to looking at indigenous ways of living, indigenous ways of surviving on the land and of cultivating the land. And that I think that the environmental movement has nothing but good intentions. And if we can, like, find a way, and I think that we have so much in common, right, in the people who critique its racism and as well as the movement, I think that we are so close to being able to work together. So I want the environmental movement to grow further, but to also take into account colonialism and capitalism, because I think that's how it really builds a worldwide movement, including people in the global south.
We have consumed more resources in the last 50 years than all of humanity that has come before. But who has been consuming these resources is a different consideration compared to counting the number of people in the world. Perhaps even the question of why our system drives us to consume so much needs to be answered before a range of solutions is found for species extinction and the climate emergency. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Thanks so much to Adrienne Glamorgan for this week's report, bringing us Sangeetha Dhanapal, who writes on anti-racism. Her most recent article appears in last week's Eureka Street Online. And you can find Understory online too, as well as on air here at RTRFM. Join us next week, won't you? When you can explore more with Understory. Radio for the planet.